Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, my name is VexX, and this is the Vex on Vex podcast, episode number 43. Joining us for the second installment in a row is Mike, also known as Magnus.
Yo.
How are you?
I am chilly.
Chilly, right? So today is February the 12th of 2019.
Correct.
And it's a weird, sleety snowstorm here in the great city of Philadelphia.
It's a beautiful wintry mix.
Is it a beautiful wintry mix? Dude, driving was atrocious.
It was.
Like, not that the roads are bad per se, but no one can seem to navigate properly.
No, not at all.
So you got into my car.
Yes.
And then we just started instantly battling about things that we should be discussing on the podcast.
Correct. Let's not talk about it.
Exactly. So let's start at the beginning.
Yes.
You had brought up last night, which would be February the 11th.
Correct.
At Roosevelt Mall, what happened?
Yes, there was a shooting. Multiple people shot at the Roosevelt Mall, 8:30 last night, while all the stores are still open.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The officer that was interviewed said that three people engaged two other people with an AR-15-style weapon. 24 rounds were shot, and two people were taken by an unknown person to a local hospital in critical condition.
So no one died yet?
Not that I know of yet, but that was... the interview with the police officer was about 10 o'clock last night, and I didn't see the article until this morning at about 9 a.m., but I haven't looked into it anymore.
Now, we're not a news program, and we're not political or anything in that matter, but we do discuss things.
Yes.
And so we were in the car, and you brought this up, and I was like, oh, the AR-15. And I said, you know, do you know the guy who invented the M16? And I think we briefly discussed that he was a gentleman who was in his 20s at the time, and he was working for an arms manufacturer. And he develops this awesome weapon that when you told me in the car, I'm not going to steal it, but you said, when fired from a distance, the M16 round ricochets inside someone's body, so it could go into your shoulder and come at your ankle, and you're completely decimated from shoulder to ankle.
Right.
Now, you were saying something about the round specifically, because I said, oh, if he shot him with an AR-15, it's the same effect, and you said no, because?
Well, the AR-15 round, it's normally chambered in one of two calibers, either .223 or 5.56 millimeter.
Okay.
The .223, the differences between the two rounds are minimal. It's a machinist thing at that point.
Okay.
But the ballistics are identical when you're talking about that. More than likely, this was a 5.56. At close range, those rounds, once they exit the barrel, are traveling at supersonic speeds. So it rips right through you at close range.
So no ricocheting.
Correct.
Okay.
That's all about velocity. When you have a small caliber round with high velocity, they tear right through you. But at distance, they won't. They'll bounce around and then exit you, but it may not even be a through and through. More than likely, each one of those people have through and through shots.
Yeah, so the victims at Roosevelt Mall have gaping holes in their body at this point for an AR-15.
Yeah.
So you're very big on the Second Amendment.
Somewhat,
or maybe you have it wrong, so tell me your thoughts.
I'm 50-50 on it.
Explain.
I believe we have the right to defend ourselves by any means necessary, and that if our government and our local police department employ these type of weapons to defend us from other aggressors, we should have the same capability. Only caveat is there should be some type of competency that comes along with owning one of these, any type of firearm.
I got in a weird discussion years ago on Facebook, which is, I'm not political.
Right.
But they were like, oh, I need to defend myself, blah, blah, blah. And I remember writing, I was like, listen, you know, a 38, a little six shot that the police used to carry in the late 70s and the early 80s.
Right.
Will kill anything moving in your house. If you know how to shoot a weapon, a 38's going to stop whoever the fuck it is.
Absolutely.
And this person vehemently disagreed and needed bigger caliber and needed machine guns. And I was like, if it's for home defense, a 38 should be fine. In my opinion.
Most of the time, yes. There are weaker, what I consider weaker, I'm doing quotes for people at home, air quotes, weaker rounds that do not have the same stopping capabilities as a 38 does.
Okay.
A 38 or a 38 plus P is a little less powerful than a 9mm. 9mm was dubbed kind of the friendly round because it doesn't kill. Our servicemen were using 45 ACP pistols.
What's ACP?
I don't remember what ACP stands for.
Okay, so but 45 caliber pistol.
Right, a 45 caliber
pistol. Which is a fucking killer, dude.
Correct, exactly. We use that in the, what's the name of the 1911 platform?
No idea what that means.
It's the very first ever American-made semi-automatic pistol that was made back in 1909.
Okay, okay.
And the first, the The first iteration of it was in 1909. The first one that the military bought onto was the one that was manufactured in 1911.
So we're talking 80 years later, this is still the weapon of choice for
it
the military.
It is still, well, every...
At the time. Now we're like 100 years later.
But. Right. Well, we're using the Beretta FS-92, I believe, right now, or okay. They just upgraded from that to something else. I'm not sure.
But we're going down a rabbit hole.
Right. Anyway, but the 45 caliber pistol is what the military used to put down people in the Second World
War. But 45s are fucking monstrous rounds,
it's,
dude.
It's, diameter-wise, it's twice the diameter of a 9mm, but it doesn't carry the same speed that a 9mm
velocity.
Does. Correct. So you can put more rounds downrange with a 9mm than you can with a 45.
All right. Now, speaking weapon-wise,
yes.
If you're stopping something, air quotes, from coming towards you,
right.
And we're talking within like 20 feet, not a long distance, mm-hmm. Okay? A 45 is the weapon of choice, I would
correct.
Think. You could do less.
That's
with,
what I defend my home with.
It's less with so much more.
Right.
Yeah, because like one shot and you're dropping whatever the fuck
yes.
that is.
Well, let me rephrase. Let me correct what I just said. I have two pistols that I keep at home.
Maybe we don't brag about that on the podcast. Maybe we should.
Don't
like,
care.
I'll give an example. I don't tell anyone the weapon cachet that I may or may not have.
Right.
Like, I know what I have, but I have no desire to share it with the listening
right.
public.
Well, I'm a big fan of the 357 Magnum.
Very popular weapon.
Very big fan.
Now, you know what made it so famous?
Not sure.
The Dirty Harry films.
Really?
Yeah, it was like the first, it was really brand new.
Okay.
And I think, and don't quote me, the first Dirty Harry is 69, mm-hmm. and it's based on like the Zodiac Killer, but
yes.
it's not, obviously.
Right.
And the actor who played the killer in the movie later played Liberace in the made-for-TV movie in the 80s.
Mm.
For real. I don't know why I know that. But
I think I remember that movie.
Yeah. Oh, I love that movie. It was
yeah.
great. They wouldn't really acknowledge it, but it kind of does. And
right.
So
flamboyant.
Yeah. Dude, all right. I'm going to give you a story about Liberace in a moment, but let's
okay.
get to let's
yes,
finish
I
our fucking line. So the Magnum becomes like the most popular handgun because he talks about it in the movie. It's almost like he made a commercial
right.
for the weapon, which was relatively new. The recoil's obscene.
Yes.
So as someone who fires a weapon. No, for real. Because when you're a little kid, you're like, ah, Magnum. No, fuck a Magnum.
No.
Like, go ahead. Tell me why.
So I have a... My two pistols of choice are the 357 Magnum revolver, six-shot.
Okay. Which never jams under any circumstances ever. No, it doesn't.
Sometimes.
Revolvers don't jam.
They have timing between the trigger and the cylinder
okay.
movement. There's a timing mechanism inside of it. Sometimes if the teeth on that mechanism wear down, you'll have a misfire.
No,
so,
but you still have the fucking the butt in the back where you can... And you could still fire a weapon without
correct.
The trigger. And that's why, personally, go ahead. I like revolvers, but go ahead.
Right. So that's about the only thing that could happen besides, like, the primer not working right.
I drove an armored truck briefly
really?
In my life. And
cool.
the weapons that they gave everybody were the fucking revolvers.
Right.
And then, of course, in training, when they tell you, like, listen. So, I was in a truck, this old man. He's, like, 55, which, in my mind, at the time, is old, right? So he's like, I was in a truck. And I got out, and I'm moving the money, and the gangster guy comes around the corner, and I hear click, click, and his weapon jams, and he looks at it, and I just got out my revolver, and I dropped that motherfucker.
Nice.
And I was like, because he's like, they just don't jam.
Right.
Like, 9mm jam.
Yes.
And what's the gun? The Glocks are supposed to fire underwater?
Correct.
They're not as impervious as they're led to believe.
Well, that's a kit.
Explain.
Any semi-automatic weapon can be turned into a weapon that can fire underwater. As we know, anything that burns needs air. Correct?
I thought, now help me, because I really don't know.
Okay.
I thought the Magnum, the Glock from the door is already ready to fire underwater.
No.
Oh.
I mean, they can be fired underwater. You may get one round off, but
which
once,
is all you need most of the time.
Right, but once the ammo itself gets wet, it's done.
Oh.
It may take a while. You may get underneath. You may get underwater, and you may get off a couple rounds. But once water starts seeping in between where the bullet
the
itself and the casing
out, yeah,
connects,
yeah, yeah.
that's when you're going to start having problems like that.
Interesting.
So
Chris Rock had this great bit 20 years ago that they should just make bullets $7,000 a round. And he's like, there will never be
yeah.
a fucked up
instead
drive.
Instead of medication.
No, there will never be a fucked up drive-by again.
Right.
It's like, ka, 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 ka. He's like, all right, this is $7,000. He's like, oh, I hate you. I'm going to go save up. I'm going to come back. I'm going to fuck you up. You know what I mean? Because it's $7,000 for a fucking
right.
round.
Exactly.
Which is kind of amazing, actually. Obviously, it's not happening. But
I think the most I've ever paid for one round was $17.
Oh, my God. That's astronomical.
Yeah.
Why?
It was for a, whatchamacallit? It was for a competition for shooting, like... a mile.
I mean, is it a silver fucking bullet? What are we talking about?
No. It's specially made balanced, specially made round by a whatchamacallit, an armorer.
By whatchamacallit? Don't they make a candy bar?
Yes, but they do. It's really good, too. That and the whatchamacallit, the peanut chews. I love peanut chews.
I like peanut chews a great deal myself. Yes. I haven't had one in many years, but I do love them.
Agreed.
Manufactured in Philadelphia specifically, I
correct.
Thought.
My buddy Joe used to work there.
Do they have them on the West Coast, or is it like an East Coast thing? I don't know. And I've been to California. You figure I would know this. I have no idea.
They got Tasty Cakes in Texas.
Barely.
Walmarts and stuff like that have them.
Because the shipping is like, it's weird.
Right.
I know, I'm a bit of a Tasty Cake aficionado, if you will. And there's rules. And if it takes too long to get to the fucking destination, they will not ship it. They won't ship it.
Right.
They just won't do it. And then people, there's a whole thing. So we've been to California a lot because of Starscream, like, I don't know, a couple dozen times over the years. And when you're there, there's like the Philadelphia bar.
Right.
It's all Eagle stuff. It's all people.
Oh, we got bars everywhere.
Well, everybody does. But the point is that there's a Philadelphia section.
There's one that just opened up in London that my buddy went to and watched the Super Bowl ad.
Well, you know why, don't you?
Why?
Because they go, the Eagles go there every couple of years to play.
Oh, okay.
Plus, we just won the Super Bowl, so we're kind of a thing. I mean, this year, the Pats won. Fuck the Pats. Not that I'm bitter or anything.
Again.
Worst fucking Super Bowl in history.
It was 3 points. Who wants
into
to see
into the fourth
it?
Quarter. It's 3-3 in the fourth quarter.
Right.
And these are the two most powerful offenses in football. Just saying.
Right.
Anyway. The recoil of a Magnum to me is unacceptable. I can't
have it. It's painful.
And I don't want that in my life. Like, if you're coming to kill me at 2 a.m.
Right.
A Magnum, I mean, I know it's going to be amazing and it's going to make noise and fuck my wall up. I'm not going to hit the target. I'm just not. It's going to be like, oh, I missed. Fuck, I don't know where he is. Like,
no, that's not me.
Like a 38, I'll drop you. Like, no problem at all. You know what I'm saying? That's what I like about it.
Like, if you make it to my bedroom, you're done.
Well, I also feel that way. I feel that in my house, when the lights are out, I have an advantage over whoever
correct.
This is. Like, in any way. They don't know what I have and et cetera, et cetera.
Right. I feel you on that, but it's like, I forget where we're going with that.
I don't know. You said if you get into my bedroom, you're dead.
Oh, yeah. I'm just saying that's where I keep the big ones. So just say, I know you're not into that and all, but.
Well, no, it's not that I'm not into it. I'm really not. It's just that, I don't know, like, it isn't, the first time I picked up a guitar, it was physically uncomfortable. I remember I was like 6. I think my dad tried to teach me to play.
Right.
And I was left-handed, so it was like a thing, and he had to change the strings over, and it was complicated.
Right.
And it was very uncomfortable for my hand, but by like 13, 14, not as uncomfortable anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I picked up a firearm, and again, I was a kid. Like,
right.
I was firing pretty young. It was dramatic.
I didn't get into it until I was a teenager.
Okay.
I was 14 years old the first time I fired a firearm.
Okay.
Other than in Boy Scouts in grade school, I went to that Boy Scout camp here in PA and shot a 22 long rifle. So that was kind of fun. But that didn't have any recoil to it. And I was a big kid anyway, so I didn't feel it.
I had a cousin who was in his 20s and he lived with his parents and he had no kids at the time or anything. He wasn't married yet. And he had money because he had like a full-time job and he didn't pay a mortgage or anything. So he had like a cachet of unbelievable weaponry. He had the first time I ever saw a real crossbow in my life was in this house. And even to load the crossbow, you had to like put it against your chest. And it's like, it was hard.
Yes.
Especially when I was little. And so the first time I'd ever fired a firearm was with my cousin in his mid-20s, his father and my father hammered, bro, in New Jersey, in the middle of fucking nowhere. Bang, bang. Like, they're fucking firing off weapons. And I'm like, I want to shoot a gun. You know, I'm like 7 or whatever. And they let me. Dude, the recoil, I remember it being dramatic.
Yeah, that's not a good time. Me and my friends that are the same way I am with the Second Amendment and firearm ownage, we have an age that we don't allow kids to try large caliber firearms.
It wasn't a large caliber. It's just the idea of all. It's a very physical and powerful thing. Now, I'm not opposed to it in any capacity, and I want to make something crystal clear. I like the amendments.
Right.
All of them, actually. I'm a fan of them. They exist for a reason. I'm a huge history fan, and I like this sentence that a general said from Japan during the Second World War conflict. We could never invade America. Why is that, General? Because there will be a weapon behind every blade of grass.
You remember his name?
No, do you?
General Yamamoto.
And the fact that that was said is amazing to me, and I want the world to think that we're fucking armed out of our teeth, because we are.
Well, yeah, we are.
And that's not a bad thing, per se. I don't like that there's people being robbed. I hate that that's like a thing. When you go into like the ghetto, which I spend time in. No, for real, because that's what I do for a living. There's a certain intimidation there. Everybody's armed. You know this.
Right.
I don't know, man. I've never been shot, thank God, you know.
Yeah.
I've definitely had someone pull a knife on me before, and in my youth and exuberance and stupidity, I grabbed it from the blade out of his hand.
Oh.
And when he ran away, I didn't know why, and then I looked at my fucking right hand, and I was bleeding like a sieve, and I was like, oh, perhaps I shouldn't have grabbed the knife in that capacity. Yeah. But I had a new knife, so that was kind of cool.
Yeah, true.
But
I have a couple of them stored away. Knives I've taken from people who tried to
bleed. Oh, we discussed that last
time.
Yes,
we did.
But it's like, I don't know. And then I briefly was a loss prevention person, so they teach you to grab the wrist as opposed to the hand. So now
correct.
If you, a man can't stab you if you're holding his wrist and all this fucking dumb shit. Leverage, you know?
Right.
And I'm 6'1", I'm 2'15". Like, I can, let's tangle, you know?
Right.
It'll be fun. Excuse me. Anyway.
So I was saying, that's what I was saying to Shangus the other day. He's like, you want to spar? I was like, I think I just want to beat someone's ass. He goes, ha, I get that.
The lead singer of We Are One is a devastating hand-to-hand athlete, if you will, or machine or weapon.
Is.
He's a bad motherfucker.
Like, yes.
He's someone you don't want to try.
No.
It will end badly for you.
That's why I want to spar with him. I want to get to that level.
No, but there is no sparring with him. He's just going to knock you on your ass. And that's what he'd do to me if I spar with him. Like, there's no sparring.
He could try.
Oh, no, no, no.
Remember, 4 disciplines under my belt.
No, I hear you. I'm looking at your body, and I'm looking at my body, and then I look at his body.
Right.
He's going to win this conflict.
Probably.
It's just the way it is. Like, conditioning's real.
But I'm, like, hitting a wall.
I hear you. He doesn't have to. It's all leverage. He's a bad motherfucker, dude.
Like, I agree. I've seen his style.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, that will work.
And he's a really nice guy. It's like he's going around beating people up. And actually, the more dangerous or well-trained a human being is, the more calm they are, really. Like, those aren't the guys at bars going, let's do this. Like, they don't give a shit. They know they can knock you unconscious. It's not a problem for them.
Correct.
So I like that.
Yeah, that's why I get along with bouncers. They look at me and go, you used to do this, didn't you? And I'm like, yeah.
I was a bouncer very briefly. I've done everything at this point in my life. I was a bouncer.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I've done a little bit of everything. I did bouncing at a couple cabarets here in the Philadelphia area, one up in Hatfield. I was at consistently for about 2 years. So that was kind of fun.
Now, Skip, the bass player of the band Starscream, was a legitimate bouncer for a very long time.
No, he is a legitimate bouncer.
Well, he's 6'5".
Right.
He's a bad mamma jamma. And he's been in more fights than I could ever even fathom.
He was a bad mother.
Okay.
Shut your mouth.
We're talking about Chef.
I don't know.
Pearl Jam had a song, a knockoff version of that. Shut your mouth. And it was
God.
It was called Dirty Frank or something.
That's awesome.
And then, no, it wasn't awesome, actually. It was a little weird. But I don't know. I'm mad at Eddie Vedder. I'll get past it, I suppose. So, again, we're going to go back to this fucking central theme of the thread.
Yes.
The 45 caliber handgun, in my humble opinion, is just too much.
In the semi-automatic platform, it's not that bad to fire. It is actually comfortable, air quotes again, to fire in that platform. 45 caliber handgun and revolver, not in the least fun or enjoyable to shoot.
Are you a hunter?
Sometimes.
I'm not a hunter. I don't do it. I guess I've gone when I was a kid, but I'm not a hunter.
Right.
And
I was when I was in North Carolina.
There's something to it, like to use your weapon and to, like, put it through a living thing, and you want to kill it quickly and methodically and smart, and then you see the damage that happens to a bullet when it hits bone or it goes through, like a body. It's radically different stuff. I'd rather just fist fight someone. I really would. Like, I'm not a gun person in that capacity. If you come to my house, it might end badly for you.
Levels.
Explain.
I believe in levels. Someone comes at you with a knife. You have the chance to either run away, defend yourself in some capacity, or accept what they're trying to do to you. The last one is never an option, in my opinion.
In your opinion.
Correct. So, I could run away and get away from the person to the best of my ability, or I can defend myself. Not much of a runner, so I've chosen to defend myself time and time again. I've had people come up against me with a knife. I've never used a weapon to take a knife from someone. I've never pulled a firearm on someone who has a knife pointed at me or trying to use it against me. I have, however, pulled a firearm out on somebody who's pulled a gun on me, with the exception of one knife incident, and that was the one that we talked about at the pub up
on
Street Road.
It was the last episode, actually.
Right, so that one was kind of different in that aspect. But any other time, I've always gone either hand-to-hand or gotten out of the situation in whatever way I possibly could by just running away or kicking the dude in the chest and taking off.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I could never kick anyone in the chest. I don't have a...
I can.
Yeah, I'm not there anymore.
Yeah.
I once was as a younger Vex, but not in 2019.
I can do the straight-on Sparta.
I can pop you in the balls pretty easy, though.
Oh, yeah.
So I got that one unlocked.
Like, I could kick you in the balls so quickly, you wouldn't feel it until after I kicked you the second time.
I've been pursuing for the past 3 or 4 years the single knockout punch when you hit the button.
Yes.
On the jaw.
Correct.
It is not my forte. I punch in the throat, mm-hmm. and I punch in the stomach. I like hitting the stomach in the beginning and sucking all the air out of your opponent.
Right.
Because if they can't breathe, there's not much more of a fight.
Correct.
But the button. Oh, I like the button.
I like watching people drop, too, from the button. It's funny.
Yeah, something about that.
One of the ones that was the best, it was a tournament. It was a full contact tournament that I was in down in Center City years ago. But I hit some guy on the button, and he just crumpled like I dropped a bag of leaves on the ground. You know what I mean? He just went... Ugh.
You know who Joe Rogan is, obviously,
yes.
right? So Joe Rogan is like the Johnny Carson of podcasting. And since we're like a shitty little pod... No, he is, though.
That is a great analogy.
Why, thank you. I don't think it's even my analogy. I think I probably stole it. But it's true. In like 2019, if you remember, in 1975,
right.
if you're a stand-up comedian and you're on the fucking Tonight Show, mm-hmm. Monday you're famous.
Right.
Friday night, you're on Johnny Carson show. You deliver your fucking shit. If he calls you to the couch... Monday, you're famous.
Right.
Tuesday, you get a sitcom, and then you're a fucking star.
Seinfeld.
For real. Well, it's interesting you say that, because not really, because Seinfeld, it took like 10 years, so that didn't really happen for him.
Right.
But a little earlier, it was like the biggest thing in the world. I have to cough, excuse me.
Good. You all right?
Yeah, I'm recovering. It's been a long time. So, today, in 2019, if you want to get millions of people to listen to your point, or downloads instantly, mm-hmm. you go on the Joe Rogan podcast. Like
right.
he gets like 3 to 4 million a day.
Wow.
Like if you're on Monday, by Tuesday there's 4 million people that have listened to that show. You didn't
wow.
know that, did you?
No.
And it's all like monetized. It's like amazing. So he is the Johnny Carson of what we do.
Okay.
He's the guy right now. He's the most powerful person. He's not a dick. He's not like...
Right. I've met him. He's a cool dude.
You've met him?
Yes.
I didn't know that. Tell me.
It was a weed event down in...
Of course it was.
Down in Center City. So,
how long ago was this?
I want to say 10 years.
So before he's Johnny Carson.
Yes.
Because back then he was just Fear Factory host.
Correct.
So Fear Factor, I'm sorry. So he is a very skilled in competition at hand-to-hand combat.
Yes,
right?
He's all about the UFC.
Well, no, I'm not that. From his childhood, like he competed. He was like somebody.
Okay.
Like he fought.
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. And he stopped because he started like understanding about brain traumas and head
right.
injuries. He still trains and he's still badass. And he said recently, like 5 years ago, he's just sparring with his friends and somebody popped him in the button. And he said, my mind was 100% of what was going on. I wasn't knocked unconscious, but my knees buckled. And he's like, I was on my fucking back. And he's like,
right.
he didn't hit me that hard. And it didn't knock me unconscious. But the button is just the way it is in the jaw, man.
Right.
It's set up that if you get popped in a certain way, you're out. That's
right.
it. The fight is over.
Well, what it does is the button, the neurological effect that
yeah.
it has on you, it interrupts the motor responses in the medulla oblongata.
Ah.
All that involuntary motor reflexes that we have from the quote-unquote lizard brain portion of our brain
sure.
or the reptilian portion of our brain is what controls us, keeping us upright, keeping us moving and not moving. It's all that involuntary stuff. So as soon as you hit the button, all that goes out the window and gets interrupted for a second, and you just collapse.
Now, I don't know about you, but in any time I've been in a combat situation, I fold my chin into my chest.
Right.
I guess I was taught this as a kid. I wasn't skilled as a fighter, but I definitely took wrestling as a teenager and a child and stuff. Like, for real, I think I was like 11 when I started wrestling. So, like, I just taught, I got certain things. So I just instantly, I protect my chin.
Right.
And I guess that would be why. It wasn't my idea.
Okay.
But I pull off of punches. Like, I'm pretty good at that. I'm fast. Like, you might not pop me. I might not pop you, but you're not really getting me. You know
right.
what I'm saying? Like, I'm going to fucking move my head and keep my chin moving and all that
yeah.
shit. And I guess that would be why. They must have told me that when I was a kid because...
I'm completely different. I go, hit me. Hit me hard.
And then
I flatten people.
In a bar, I have definitely said, go ahead and hit me as hard as you can. And if I'm still standing, you better fucking run because
right.
I'm going to destroy you. I've said those words.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really mean it because if he swung, I was going to move. Like, I wasn't going to let him hit me as hard as he could.
Right.
But I've definitely made that threat before.
No, I'm one of them people. I had an actual friend, old friend of mine. We got into a fight at work one day.
Okay.
And I told him, I was like, I got you this job here. You literally live in my house or my apartment. And you're starting with me. I was like, I'm going to give you one shot. I was like, you hit me as hard as you hit our buddy Rob years ago. And then I'm going to show you what real strength is. He hit me. My head hit the wall.
Mm-hmm.
I came off of the wall, broke his ribs, separated his shoulder, and then knocked him unconscious and left him laying on the front porch of our apartment.
Now,
he got up and looked at me 15 minutes later and was like, that is the hardest I've ever been hit in my entire life. I'm never going to fight you again. And that was the end of our conflicts till this day.
I got to tell you, I can tell by the way you told the story, you're very proud of this. Why are you proud of this?
I got beat up a lot as a kid.
I mean, we all got smacked around.
I never won a fight from second grade, from my first fight in second grade, until I would have to say ninth grade, eighth or ninth grade.
That's not that long. That's not that long. I don't even feel bad for you.
I got into a fight every week.
I remember. I remember the first time I fucked somebody up. Because you get beat up when you're little. I'll never forget. I think I was 5 or 6, and this kid named Tommy Neal moved to my neighborhood.
Right.
And I didn't know him. And we had a conflict, and he just reached over and started choking me. And I was like,
what the fuck?
Exactly. I was just like, I didn't have siblings. I didn't fight as a kid, and I didn't get it. And I was like, why are you choking me? Like, what is happening? Like, and I was 6, so I wasn't strong, you know? He was like a little jerk off, actually. And then I remember a couple years went by, and this kid who was a year older than me, but not as tall as me, because I grew pretty good.
Right.
His name is Robbie, actually. And Robbie's like, come on, motherfucker. And I was, bop, 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 like 3 or 4 to the face. And then Robbie stepped back, and his eye went, and his lip went, and he was like, this ain't over. And he just went home. And I was like, oh, I just fucked somebody up. Like, it's amazing. Like, oh.
No, I was the bigger kid, so all the smaller kids used to mess with me to try to get their street cred and stuff like that. And then I was an asshole. So
I had 2 kids in my neighborhood that were both a year older than me that were like the toughest motherfuckers that we could comprehend in our minds.
Right.
And they fought once. And the one decimated the other one. The other one became like a football star. And the one who beat his ass became a wrestling star.
Wow.
And so, of course, I joined wrestling like pretty much right after that. I was like, oh, let's join wrestling. That's pretty amazing.
Right.
It was fantastic. Like, they were just like, rah, and they went at it. And, dude, bloody nose, the whole thing, which happens a lot, I guess, when you're like 12 or 10 or whatever the fuck we were. I don't know.
That was the other thing. My dad put me into martial arts when I was a kid, took Taekwondo at the Y for a little while, and then went to a private school, the Capillaries, the local family, Italian.
You do not
family.
Have to explain any of that. Yeah, so you went to a school.
Went to a school, learned how to do Taekwondo, and I started winning fights in full gear and stuff
like
that.
Oh, yeah, it's
and
awesome.
That was fun, but it didn't feel as good as whooping somebody's ass when I was a teenager.
Okay.
So that's always great. And the guy that I was just talking about that I whooped his ass out on our front porch, he was a huge bully and used to beat people up all the time just because he felt like it. I mean, he just walked up to a mutual friend of ours at the Roosevelt Mall one day, handed him a 40 of Old English, and then uppercutted him.
I did something ridiculously stupid when I was in high school.
Oh, no.
I was bullied.
Join the club.
So I remember buying pepper spray.
Oh, no.
To keep in my pocket, just to have it. Because I was going to, like, Bridge and Pratt really late at night and coming back and, like, you know, traveling. And I had this huge London Fog overcoat, which was, like, a full length.
I remember them.
They were pretty cool, right?
Yeah. So, gray and white, like, little...
Well, mine was gray.
Yeah.
And I was, like, all gothy and, like, fucking rock and roll. And I had fucking Doc Martens on. Like, I was a weird kid.
Right.
And when we were little, there was this kid named Marty. And they called him Marty Farty, actually. And he tortured someone I grew up with, like, fucked with this kid for years upon years upon years upon years. I mean, fucked with him. And they were older than me. They were a year older than me. So I didn't do anything about it. But I remember thinking, this is jerked off. And then at the tender age of, like, 16, I'm at the bus stop, and who turns up but Marty Farty and 2 of his fucking jerk-off friends.
Lovely.
And I'm standing there with my friend. And this is the dumbest thing I've ever done in my life. I don't know why I did it. But he was just talking shit, and I looked at him, and I sprayed him right in the face with the fucking pepper spray.
That's beautiful.
And he drops, right? Then his boys come at me because I wasn't prepared for any of this.
Right.
And then they like try to smash a beer bottle. But again, I'm pretty slick. So I move my head. The beer bottle smashes against the wall. It doesn't hit me. And I'm going at it with these 2 little guys. And I break away. And I get into a cab. And the cabbie's like, it's over. I'm taking him home. It's over. Right? No, so listen. Again, Marty did nothing to me. I mean nothing
to
me.
But he was a dick to other people that you liked.
Yeah. And I for some reason, that was the great reckoning at the time.
Right.
8 months go by, right? I still got the same fucking London Fog. Well, maybe it's 6 months. Long fucking time. And I'm walking in my neighborhood, and who pulls by in his new fucking car but Marty with 3 of his fucking friends in the car.
Oh, great.
And he makes eye contact with me, right? And I'm like, this is going to end badly. Four of them, and there's only one of me, right? So
spray the car.
No, listen. Spray the car. So
stick it in the window.
Actually, I didn't buy another one because I felt like an asshole. I shouldn't have done it.
Right.
If I didn't have it, he didn't attack me. I don't know why. I never bought another one again.
Right.
Like, so I don't need that in my life. But I don't know. I was 16. I was a kid. So as the car pulls past me, I see him like turn his whole body. He's like, that's the guy. I could just see it. And they go around the corner, and I'm like, this is my chance.
Right.
So I'm off like a rabbit.
Gone.
And I used to be a paper boy in this neighborhood a few years before.
So you know the neighborhood.
Yeah. So I run over to an alley. I know this house. I'm just sitting in somebody's yard under a huge awning, just sitting there.
Right.
And that way that was situated, I could see the back street from the fucking thing, but no one could see me because it was really dark. And I'm watching this car circle for like 10 fucking minutes. And I'm just sitting there. I know. And I'm like, I can't believe that I got myself in this fucking situation. And then they went away. And then I just walked home and everything was cool. And I never, ever crossed paths with that person ever the fuck again.
Right.
But it was the dumbest thing I'd ever done. I don't know why I did it. He did not attack me. He was not aggressive towards me. I'm looking at him. He was older than me. If I was 16, he was 17 or 18. He had tortured my friend for years.
There was a kid in my neighborhood, Bobby Wilson.
Okay.
He was that
guy. You probably shouldn't say last names, but okay.
He's dead, so I don't care.
Okay.
He died the way he should have, and I'm happy.
I got a story
about
that too next, but go ahead.
Yeah, he was the neighborhood bully. He was taller than all of us. He was like, same thing as the guy that you gave the two-piece no biscuit to. He used to just beat up kids because he felt like it.
Yeah.
Just walk up to him, kick him in the chest,
yeah.
Punch him in the face. He broke my nose, he bloodied my nose and gave me a black eye for no reason.
No reason.
I'm just standing in Juniata Park, hanging out with my friends, and he just walked up and punched me and just walked away. Never stopped and said anything.
Lovely.
Kept right on going, went right down to the creek and smoked his weed.
Okay.
So years later, I'm just getting out of the Army, and I'm walking up K Street in Juniata.
You know it well.
I'm right at the 7-Eleven, right at the...
Oh my God, I know it really fucking...
K and
Luzerne. Know it very
Luzerne.
Well.
So I'm walking into the parking lot, and he's coming out and walking towards me. He's got two of his friends with him. He walks up to me and kicks me in the chest. Like, straight leg kick to the chest. That was his signature move. He would come up, kick you in the chest, do the Sparta, and then walk away. Or he'd punch you in the face. That was his thing. He did it to everybody. There was nobody that was safe from it, even girls. So I'm home from the military. I just got into a fight with some guys in Bridesburg the day before over my kid's mom, over my oldest
None
son.
None of this point matters.
No, it's
You're
sets
just angry.
It up. No, it sets up what's about to happen perfectly.
Go ahead.
So I had just been blown up three times. I'm at the height of my physical prowess at this point in my life. I was never in any better shape than this particular moment. He kicks me in the chest and breaks his knee.
Holy shit.
I saw him coming, and I knew what he was about to do because we hated each other. And his buddy Chris was with him, and Chris and I had problems because I dated Chris's sister before I went into the military. And kind of.
Oh my God, stop with that.
Anyway, so we went on, what you call it? He kicks me in the chest, dislocates or breaks his kneecap.
That's amazing.
With the kick, because I forced into it, and then I just grabbed him by the throat, threw him up against the wall, and laid into him until the cops showed up.
Okay.
The guy who runs the 7-Eleven called the police. The police showed up maybe about 5 minutes later.
Okay.
An entire 5 minutes, I was just sitting there beating on him mercilessly. His buddy Chris tried to help him, grabbed Chris by the back of the neck and the head, and slammed his head into the wall of the 7-Eleven three times, and he just crumpled.
Now, can I ask details?
Sure.
If you're in your 20s, because that's when you're in your 20s.
19.
What's the point of still being a jerk off? Like, I had a bully,
right?
But by post-high school, that shit was over.
Right.
Like, I never saw that fucking person again, actually.
Well, I had been out of the neighborhood for 4 years at that point. Or 3.5, 4 years at that point. And no one knew where I was or what was going on. I was literally only in Juniata for another 8 months after that. I was looking for a place to get out of the neighborhood and move somewhere. Why not move to Frankfurt?
No, but why does this kid still have a hard-on for you at 19?
Because I was one of the only ones that he couldn't knock out.
Well, he couldn't that day.
I was one of the only ones he was never able to hurt to the point where I looked at him every time he came up to us and I laughed at him. And he just stopped messing with me at one point. And then he thought, oh, look, Mariachi's back. I'm going to kick him in the chest as I'm walking through the... I mean, it was this thing. But that day, he healed up, went on to a long life and career as a criminal, car thief, and drug addict and drug dealer. He got run off the road by the Jersey State Police on the Atlantic City Expressway, stealing a high-dollar car from a casino down in AC.
Did he die?
Yes.
Okay. I went to North Catholic.
My condolences.
No, it wasn't bad.
Nah, good school.
I liked it. I wanted to go to Roman, actually, just to get away from the neighborhood because I hated everybody. Hate everybody I grew up with. I fucking hated them. I was like, fuck this. And I'll be honest with you. I lived in Port Richmond for a long time, and I never associated. As soon as I was old enough to get a bus pass, I was fucking gone.
Yeah, me too.
Like, I spent years in Juniata. I spent years in Wissanoming. Like, I just was nowhere.
I was never big on Wiss.
Hey, there were fucking girls with big boobies, and I was all about that shit. And then, ironically enough, the girls that I was fucking making time with, as my father would say.
Right.
The guy who's
An old phrase.
The guy who's the foreman for my company today dated one of those women back then because they were fucking fine bitches. Like, right. So we knew later, obviously, mutual people. But anyway, the point of the story is freshman, sophomore, maybe junior year, this guy fucked with me the whole time. By the time I'm a senior, he had graduated, so he was gone. I mean, he fucked with me. I just ducked him. It wasn't that big a deal, but he fucked with me, and he beat me up here and there, and it sucked. I just wasn't in the neighborhood. I didn't give a fuck.
Right.
So we're at high school. I was always in a band in high school in Juniata Park, ironically enough. And then me and King Sam get together, and the band's pretty good, and we're called The Broken. And we start playing in Center City at a place called The Ferenz, the Mighty Ferenz on Cherry Street.
Not familiar.
Right near the Trocadero Theater. So if the Troc is like huge, this is like the size of a postage stamp.
Right.
So we were playing the postage stamp.
It was kind of like the stage upstairs at the Troc.
No. Smaller. A postage fucking stamp.
Holy crap.
It was great though, because you could pack it. Like 100 people was like obscene. Like it was like you were playing a stadium, right?
Right.
Word got around the neighborhood I'm in a fucking band, which I didn't know would happen because there's no internet or anything. They're murmuring. My bully had started his own band and wanted to be Bono. That was his goal. He wanted to be like Bono. He wanted to sing. And all the little jerk-off neighborhood guys were going to play the instruments. None of them continued with this. But one bought a drum kit. You can't start when you're fucking 20. You just can't.
No.
I'm telling you. By the time I'm 20, we were really good because I started at fucking 12 and we sucked.
Right.
You understand? My first band practice is 14. Like, I'm starting then.
Same here.
My
first band practice as a rhythm guitarist was right after my 14th birthday.
So you understand.
Right.
So here they are. They're trying to get a band together. And they hear, oh, well, so-and-so's in a fucking band. Let's go see this fucking band, right? And they come in. And I must have been 19. I think mathematically I'm about 19, so that makes him 20.
Right.
Maybe 21, but right around there. And he looked at the barkeep, I heard, and he said, can you sell drinks? Like, oh, this is an all-ages show. You can get a soda, but not, you know, because we were playing like 2 o'clock in the afternoon or something.
Right.
It was an all-ages thing. And then at 6 o'clock, it would stop, and then it would be like a regular fucking bar again.
Right.
And he threw a tantrum and left because he couldn't buy beer, air quotes. And I never saw him again. Like, we never crossed paths. But he came to see me, which I found interesting.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, we sold out that day. Us and like
that's cool.
A band called LTD, which was Left to Die, which was Ron Kaiser and Joey Hardcore. Like, it was like we were good.
That first name sounds familiar. Moving forward.
Yeah, Ron's awesome. Yeah. He's still in a fucking crazy death metal band called, fuck, I'm sorry, Ron. I apologize and I'm blanking on the name. I'll look it up. I'll give you a shout out in a minute.
I'm actually starting a project.
Can I finish my story?
Go ahead.
So anyway, the guy fucking, he's supposed to come see me. He never sees me. I wish he would have because it was a good show that day.
Right.
A lot of girls. We got laid. Everybody was happy. He dies of a heroin overdose about a decade later. Maybe longer, because I heard about it from one of the kids that we used to get bullied from. I met him for lunch, and we're just hanging out. He's like, yo, so-and-so's dead. I'm like, what? So my bully died of a heroin overdose, and then it turns out my father's bully also died of a heroin overdose in the same fucking neighborhood 30 years before.
Damn.
Ba-dum-tsh. Okay, you can do your thing.
I guess it's genetic.
There's something wrong if you're a bully. Like, innately, if you want to pick on... All right. There's this fucking tacky-ass movie. I think it's called Men of Honor.
Okay.
You Can't Handle the Truth, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, remember that?
With Tom Cruise. Jack Nicholson.
The lower part of it, the two Marines who killed this guy said what they did. They were given an order, and they mistakenly killed another cadet.
Right.
And they were on trial. And they went to court, and they were like, our job is not to attack those weaker than us, but to protect them.
Right.
And that resounded with me tremendously. Ow, I just fucking hit my headphones.
Ow, I saw that.
It didn't hurt, but it was fucking weird. I hit my headphones, people listening in podcast land.
He don't smack himself in the head.
Literally. So that sticks with me to this day. You're supposed to pick up and help the weaker ones, not fucking beat on them.
Right.
And there's something innately wrong inside of a bully who is powerful, but they must have got beat on at home, yes, or they had no money, or there was something wrong with their family that they felt this need to lash out.
Right.
I didn't have that fucking problem. I had a nice home. I had a nice family. So
opposite.
No, I'm with you. I'm just, so I wasn't a bully in any capacity. And so they're broken as people internally. And they will tend to go after self-medication and drugs and things of that nature. And it's got to be weird because when you're 17, you're the baddest motherfucker in the world.
Right.
And then at 20, you're just a junkie who can't get a job.
Right.
And the rest of us have moved on and we do things.
Or you're like, I said, yeah, exactly. Like I'm military and exactly. Kid house and everybody else I know is still living in their mom's house.
Basement and shit. Yeah. So you're starting a project.
Correct. A band project. My buddy John and I, he plays bass. He's a lefty, though, so he hasn't had a bass for a little while. He just picked up a bass and an amp. I'm going to work on getting another guitar. I got my guitar amp back, and I'm borrowing my buddy's guitar for right now, but we had our first jam session last Friday afternoon.
Who's the drummer?
His son.
How old's the kid?
16.
Oh, that's nice.
He is amazing.
He can play?
Yes.
Good.
He just started playing a year and a half ago.
Oh, that's not good.
No, he's amazing. He has the mechanical aptitude to do it properly. If he can sit down and listen to a song, he can probably play it.
So you're going to find a vocalist?
His daughter.
Is she hot?
She's 12.
Okay, that's not the problem. She shouldn't be singing for your band, sir.
Why?
She's fucking 12.
Right.
But this is not who you expose to the rock and roll lifestyle.
We're not exposing her to the rock and roll. I said we're starting a project. I didn't say we're going out and playing at the Khyber Pass back in 90.
Oh, the Khyber Pass. Khyber. Did you ever play there?
Yes. That was my first gig.
It wasn't my first gig, but I remember playing it a couple times. They were always really dicks.
Right.
Like, the Khyber people weren't like, if you weren't like hipster, right, they didn't care. And they had fucking, what's his name, G.G. Allen there all the time.
I saw Nirvana there.
Bullshit.
They played Khyber Pass before they became popular. I saw them there. They opened up for some Philly local band and then rolled out. They played like 5-6 songs and were gone.
Are you sure it wasn't Dobbs? Because the footage...
Dobbs? No, it was Dobbs.
I know.
You're right.
I know it was. That's why I wanted to correct
right.
you.
Right. I'm sorry. Story. I thought they were at the Khyber. My bad.
No, we can pull up the... And they weren't the opener, actually. They were the headliner.
Oh.
And but they were nobody. But yeah. Dobbs was cool like that. So when you sign a record deal... In the 80s and the 90s,
right,
and you were on that first little track, Dobbs was part of it. CB's,
okay.
Dobbs, Boston had one. Like, all the right. cities had a fucking, the bands would come through.
Okay.
When they're nobody.
Right.
And then eventually you get to the TLA, and then the Electric Factory, and then Wells Fargo Center. Like, that's how it works.
Yeah.
But that was the opening slot as a touring musician. Like, Creed played Dobbs.
Oh.
I don't like Creed, but they played Dobbs. Mm. Like, that's where you start.
Right.
Back then when you get a record deal. And there's footage of that on fucking YouTube. We could watch as soon as we're done this podcast.
That's
actually.
Awesome.
It is awesome. And they're
might
cool.
Might actually see me in the crowd.
No, it's not that kind of footage. Like,
oh, it's
like,
just a band?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I had hair back then, too.
Yeah, so did I back then. I was in high school when they did that, so there was no way I was going to be there. Like, I wasn't... I had been in Dobbs before that, though, because my bass teacher, who I discussed...
I think I just hit 18.
Okay.
Because there's a couple years difference between the two of us.
Yes.
Yeah. So you're like 3 years younger.
Yeah, so 93 I turned 18.
Yeah, I turned 18 in 90.
Okay, so 3 years, yes.
Yeah. So I think it actually was early 90 that show happened.
Which makes sense,
yeah,
actually. Because so they come through and they did their little thing and they were happening. The footage of Rage Against the Machine at Dobbs before they're anybody is
right.
far deeper to me. Because
wow.
it's like they look 12 years old. Like they look like
the lead singer still looks like he's 12.
No, he doesn't actually.
Did he finally grow up?
Well, he got older. He didn't grow up per se, but they look fucking 12. And
right.
they come out and they're just like napalm. They were so good back then.
I loved Rage. I still like Rage.
I'm mad at Rage. I think the bass player had like a meth problem and
mad at them for one particular incident back at the Lollapalooza in 93.
Where they stood naked and wouldn't play?
Correct.
You were there for that?
I was there for that.
I went in 96 with Johnny Mack, the drummer of We Are One.
Right.
And we saw them. I wasn't 21 yet. Johnny Mack might have been 21. And they played the Electric Factory. And it was the summer Bulls on the Parade came out.
Right.
Dun-dun, dun-dun. And we climbed the pole, the big fucking pillars. And we're both on this pole because we're just like dying. We're dying from the heat.
Right.
And I look back and they're playing... probably Bulls, and the fucking strobes go off, and there's 3,000 people jumping in unison.
Wow.
And I've never, ever before or since, seen anything that cool in my life. Like, they were so tuned in that all these strangers were just on the right wavelength at the right time.
That's awesome.
It was awesome. rage.
That's why I was really upset about them not playing that Lollapalooza thing.
Because they were fire back then.
Yeah, and that was, I mean, them, Primus, and Alice in Chains were the reason I was
there. That's a great fucking show, isn't it?
I know, it was. I still remember the whole day.
I think 92 was Pearl Jam and Soundgarden. They would do a fucking hunger strike once in a while. I'm so hungry. Hey.
Yeah. There was a whole lot of weirdness that led up to that show, too. Like, I camped out overnight on, like, a patch of grass behind a bush next to the Spectrum with my ex and two of our friends.
Ew.
It was weird.
That is weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Took the train down, hung out there all night long. Things happened. Anyway.
Yeah. I'm not that person. You know, I literally own two homes, so I never have to sleep in the dirt ever.
Right. Well, like, no, it was like we wanted to get there to camp out to get in a good spot early.
I'm just not that guy.
Right.
There's lots of guys.
Yeah,
that guy
just not
didn't.
That guy.
I'm not that guy. It's not my thing per se, Mike.
Yeah.
But you a camper? You dig that stuff?
Yeah, I love camping. I got canoes, kayak. I had a John boat when I was down in North Carolina that I used to go fishing in.
Okay.
Until it sunk.
Ah, it's sunk.
I lost everything.
That's like a joke from fucking Man in the Moon, the Andy Kaufman film.
I haven't seen it.
Well, it's not the most brilliant thing ever. It's Jim Carrey is playing
Andy Kaufman
in 99, and it came out around Christmas 99. So are you taking a photo? Hold on.
Yes, I am.
I will pose for the photo.
Nah, me.
Oh, look at you with your selfies. You know, we're still recording, so you probably shouldn't.
Yes,
I'm just kidding.
I know.
I'm just kidding.
Now I'm getting you.
Hold on. There we go. I'm posing.
There you go.
Okay. And I was still talking, which was interesting. Hey, Mike.
Yes.
This is the first time we're recording a podcast since my divorce is finalized.
Huzzah!
Yeah, I'm depressed about it, actually.
That's why the house smells different.
No. She's, believe me, she still fucking lives here. Maybe soon, but we'll figure that out. But yeah, I got divorced. Isn't that that's interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm sad, man. I don't like getting divorced. I'm done with them. I don't think I'm getting married anymore.
I don't think I ever want to get married because I don't want to have to go through a divorce.
Ha! Well, so. If you wait long enough, you'll die, and then there's no divorcing.
Well, there's that.
So, I don't know. You never got married ever?
No.
I didn't know that.
No.
It's never come up?
Nope. Well, kind of.
Oh, well, that doesn't count.
No, we never made it to the event.
We'll never discuss that on here.
Yeah.
But I had always said my entire life, I am never getting married. Right? That was my thing. For real, that was my thing. And then when I was 27, my mother passed away, which fucked me up emotionally, tremendously, actually. And then a few months later, I met who became my first wife.
Right.
And I met her on February the 12th of 2004.
Oh, wow.
Our first date was on Valentine's Day, February 14th, right? We got married by June 14th. Isn't that
Holy
fucked up?
Crap.
Like 4 months to the fucking day of our first... Yeah, dude. And it wasn't intentional. I don't know how it happened, but I met this woman... And the fucking earth shook. Like, I don't know what it was. Like, I looked in her eyes, and the earth shook.
Right.
Like, I was like, oh, fuck, she's a very beautiful woman. I don't know what I'm going to do.
I had one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty nice thing, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
And then, so she passed away, which if you listen to the Vex on Vex podcast, you probably know that already, but it was really sad. And then I was like, well, I've gotten married, and the ending was awful. It broke my heart tremendously. And I'm like, I'm not getting married at least for 10 more fucking years. I don't care. Excuse me. And then I started dating this girl who was really cool, Mike. Like, I liked her. She was a good girlfriend. And we had a nice sex life, and she was smart, and she made good money, and she was really pretty. And went on for like 5 fucking years. And she's like, all right, listen, are we going to get fucking married? And I'm like, no, I told you a long time ago. That's not my thing. I'm not getting married. La, 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 la.
For those at home, I'm looking confused.
Well, 5 years in, she's like, I think she was like, I'm turning 35. And I've never been married. And I'm like, that's not really my fault, you know.
Right.
I was married, you know. And you knew I wasn't going to marry. That was kind of the whole point, you know.
Correct.
But she turned. It was weird. And I really did love her. I did. And she's like, well, if you don't marry me, I'm leaving. I'm like, okay, bye. There's the door, right? So she leaves.
Right.
For a whole year, she left. She moved to New York.
Oh.
Yeah. And we had dogs in common. So she took a dog. I had a dog. It was really weird, man.
That's not, nobody won in that relationship. You each got a dog.
And then we had to stay in touch because of the dogs.
Right.
Which was weird, like medical stuff and just things like that. So, I don't know, man. Like a year goes by and I'm missing this chick. And she's out fucking and I'm out fucking and we're not together or anything. And then I was like, all right, I'm going to drive to New York. I'm in discussion with her. I'm like, let's just fucking do this. We'll get married, I guess. And then by the time we got married, it was 8 years to the time. I said I wanted to wait 10. I wanted to wait 10 fucking years. But we got married, it was 8 years. And so we get married.
A little,
and
Premature nuptials.
Yeah, a little 2 years, man. And then the irony is, like, 2 years after that, we fucking broke up. I did something naughty. It was definitely my fault.
Right.
And I got caught, which I never used to get caught. I don't know what that's about. So I get caught.
Shit happens.
Yeah, dude, really bad. And so she's like, I'm out. And I'm like, you can't be out. We're married. Blah, blah, blah. And she's like, no, I'm out. And I'm like, oh.
Right.
So we got divorced. And that sucked. Because I was wrong. And I did love that woman. And I fucked it all up. And then, you know, the whole thing goes through. And then you have, like, property divisions and, like, bad shit. The things I didn't have to deal with the first time. So then I, like, meet this new chick a couple years later. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then she kind of brought up getting married. And I got to be honest. I had this thing in my life. I was like, well, let's see how many times I can pull off getting married at this point. Like, I never wanted to get married.
No.
And then I was like, I only get married once. And how many can I do, you know? But no, seriously. And then she had, like, a kid. I think you know that story. And so I fell in love with the kid and, like, we're like a family and stuff. Yo, she fucking cheated on me straight up. Like, straight up cheated on me and got caught. And I was like, you have been caught. And then not to talk.
Stupidly, too.
Yeah, well, not to talk shit. But when she got caught, she kind of made it sound like it was my fucking fault. And here's the thing. Here's what kills me. I actually didn't cheat. And I'm a cheater. That's what I do.
I know.
I'm that guy.
I'm not that guy, but I understand.
But, like, I didn't cheat. I really didn't. And fucking how flabbergasted was I? I was like, holy shit, I did the right thing.
That was the universe saying, this is how it feels.
You know what's weird? Skip said I probably deserved it because I fucked over the second. So I fucked over the second wife. So now the third wife had to fuck me over. But I got to be honest, I'm done. I'm fucking out.
I hear you.
So the papers are signed. I got shit back from the attorneys. It's all fucking done.
Right.
And I'm 43 years old.
Right.
Somehow I retained my properties. Thank God. I retained my business. Thank God. Right? Not paying anything out. Knock on wood. I'm done. I'm fucking done. And I'm going to be probably a serial dater unless I fall in love with somebody. But
I'm
done.
I'm going after the slew of crap that relationships that I've had over the last decade and pretty much my entire life.
The past year, even.
Oh, no. The past year's been bad.
Yeah.
Well, see, the thing is, I'm trying. That's why I'm going through this shit. I'm actually actively trying to date people and find someone to have as quote-unquote girlfriend.
Yeah.
And it's not happening. And so I've made up my mind to be non-monogamous. So
I don't even know what that means. If I have a girlfriend,
I don't want to date. I just want to have sex with people.
No, I like dating. And then, so I don't live alone yet, right?
Right.
This house is big. It's not like a mansion, but it's a big fucking house for one person. There's wings. So she lives in a different wing.
Right.
And her kid's in that wing with her. Like, that's how big the house is. They have their own bathroom and everything. But they're going to leave very soon because now it's done.
Right.
And she filed her taxes and she's getting a return and it's healthy so she can afford to get an apartment and get the fuck out, right? It's going to be weird. I want to snuggle and watch TV and I want to go to dinners and I wouldn't mind having a cool girlfriend. I really, really wouldn't.
Yeah, me too.
But that whole non-monogamy thing, I'm a little afraid of that. Like, HIV is real still. And
yeah, I'm still safe. I don't mess around without. Like, if I don't know that the woman is absolutely clean, I can prove it.
Did you see that there's new condoms that can detect an
Yes, STDs.
It's pretty amazing, isn't
it? I know.
It?
Okay, I think that's kind of cool. It uses the same technology that they use for that date rape straw and glasses.
Hold on. Date rape straw and glasses. I don't know what the fuck that means.
Really? You haven't heard about that?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Bars nowadays, or you can go out and buy them. If a date rape drug is dropped into your drink,
it changes color?
It gets a red swirl around the inside of the glass or the straw itself.
So you're blowing my mind right now. Let me get this straight.
Right.
If we go into a bar,
right,
and me and you are partying, and I'm like, I'm going to roofie Mike and do things to his boobies, and I drop something in your glass, what's going to happen exactly?
They're specific glasses, okay? So
it's the glass, it's not
the glass itself. It has a coating on the inside that activates and shows up a certain color when the date rape drug has been dropped inside of it. Yes. So they also have straws for that. So a lot of the women that I know, I buy them these straws as gifts. So I give them my personal care package is a taser, pepper spray, and date rape straws.
I don't have any children.
Okay.
But I remember discussing with the most recent ex-wife that if we had a daughter, because I wanted a daughter, I did. Or a child, I should say. And I know God's going to curse me. So if I have a baby, it's going to be a really beautiful fucking girl.
Right.
Because fuck me. Yeah, that's how God is. And I know this. So personally, I feel like every 15-year-old girl should have a fucking like little knife in her fucking purse.
Oh, I agree.
That she plugs just into someone's thigh, turns it, and then pulls it out so it won't stop bleeding. Right. You know what I mean? That's just what I would teach my 14-year-old daughter if she was a freshman in high school.
Right.
That's why I don't have a kid, I guess. I'm a little fucked up. Like, no, I know that you should be careful. But if someone tries to rape you, this is how you fuck them up. Because if a date rapist is 16 and his leg won't stop bleeding, he has to go to a hospital.
Correct.
So the cops will be like, oh, why is there a hole in your leg? It won't stop, eh? So
right.
I figure that's how you get them caught.
There's a couple of knives that will cause that to be worse than it actually is.
What do you mean? Worse than it actually is doesn't make sense to me.
There's two types of blades that are almost impossible to suture. So you've heard of the old bayonets from back in the World War One, the Civil War and everything. They're shaped like a triangle.
Okay.
You can't stop the bleeding of that. So they took another level of that and made it so, imagine taking that triangle and then twisting it. So kind of like a wrought iron fence post.
I'm with you.
When that blade goes in and pulls out, you can't fix it.
That's not going to fit in her tiny little fucking coach purse, okay?
No, it's not. I'm just saying.
Like a little tiny butterfly knife, which I know is illegal,
right,
but I like them. Or a little tiny, like, regular hunting knife. Like, what's the... That would be... That we're on a... No one knows.
I am holding a little folder pocket knife in my hands with a plastic handle and
a
metal blade.
A folder pocket knife with a plastic handle and a metal blade for my little 14-year-old beautiful daughter.
Right.
Who will probably look like her mother with my eyes, so she's going to be hot as fuck.
Scary.
Yeah, right? I just don't need that in my life. So it's good that I don't have kids, probably, because she really... I would have a daughter, and she'd be hot, and then I'd have to fucking kill people, and it wouldn't be right. I want to make her like a lesbian if I could, but I don't know. I don't know how you do that.
Still have to worry about other lesbians raping her. I'm just saying.
Well, anyway.
It's just different.
No, it's not, though. My God, that was such a sexist, awful sentence. I don't agree with that synopsis
at all. Well, it's a different type of rape. It's still rape.
I don't...
I don't know.
Did you... Okay, there's a few things we could discuss. We're going to go over the hour, I've decided, because I love having you on, and it's nice talking to you. In New York, they passed a law that, like, ninth-month abortions is, like, legal. Did you hear about this?
Yes.
What the fuck? Like, I'm not going to lie.
Late-term abortions are now legal.
Is it the whole country, or is it just in... I thought it was just New York.
I think it's just in New York
now. I am pro-choice. I'm not going to lie. I really, really am.
Same here.
But I don't like that for some reason. I feel like you're killing a baby.
You are.
Like, for real.
Yes, because at 7 months, I've even seen kids that were born at 5.5
who grow normal and have, like, great lives and shit.
Right.
So,
a friend of mine, I'm not going to bring up any names or anything, but her son was born severely prematurely. He was born at 5.5 months. He had a feeding tube in until he was about 3 years old because of
that's ridiculous.
Developmental problems.
That's sad.
But he's fine now. He's perfectly fine. He's out playing soccer on a regular basis. He's doing sports, attending school, and there's nothing wrong with
him. This is how I know I'm getting old. Like, I'm uncomfortable with the concept of a late-term abortion. It makes me sad.
It does make me sad, too. But at the other, on the same standpoint, if it's not just someone saying, okay, I don't want this baby, there's got to be a medical reason for it.
At that point, at 9 months, just have the baby and give it up for adoption.
Right.
Because there are thousands and thousands of families who cannot have children.
I agree.
Who would kill to have a nice, healthy baby.
Right.
I don't know, man. And I'm not. I'm a pro-choice human being. I really, really am. I really am. I feel like, do whatever you want. It's all right. Here's how you know I'm getting old. There's this old, old sentence that I never liked, that if you are in your 20s and you're not a liberal, you're heartless. And if you're in your 40s and you're still a liberal, you're stupid. You know what I mean? And I don't know. Like, I'm not a Republican.
Right.
But smaller government is enticing to me. Like, all right, Ronald Reagan.
There has to be a medium.
But smaller. Like, we're big now. Like,
yes.
Facebook with fucking recognition of photographs. You know what I mean? Facial recognition. That's it. That's a lot. I don't need that in our lives, I think.
You familiar with Google Image?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so you can go there and upload a picture, and it can find all of the iterations of similar type pictures online just from one picture.
I don't like that.
Like, I could take your picture, plug it into Google Image, hit go, and it'll bring up other similar images of you. It'll find you exactly because it has the facial recognition software built into that portion of it.
Okay.
And their servers are ridiculously fast.
So, did you watch on Netflix the Ted Bundy tapes, which is the most recent thing?
No, I have not.
I was pretty well versed in the Ted Bundy situation. Right. It happened in our lifetime.
Yes.
Especially the
incarceration. No, I remember it.
Exactly. I said I'm pretty well versed. I remember it. I remember when he got executed, the whole thing. But I didn't know this aspect of the story, that when he escapes the second time from incarceration, mm-hmm. he goes right to Florida, which is the furthest point away in the United States from where he was, because he right. was in the northern west,
right.
and now he went to the southern east, right? He was in Colorado or wherever he was. So he goes. Excuse me. And when he's in Florida, of course he kills a whole bunch of fucking people because he's fucking insane.
Right.
And he gets caught driving a stolen fucking car. So it turns out Ted Bundy is the most prolific serial killer in American history, without a doubt. And he's really good at not getting caught, but he can't drive because every single time he got caught, he was in a car. Excuse me. So he steals a car and they pull him over. And in 1978, licenses didn't have fucking pictures on them, Mike. They
really?
Just did. Yeah.
Huh.
You didn't know that?
No.
Yeah. So remember when you started to drive and you had your learner's permit?
Right.
There's no picture on it, right?
Right.
Well, licenses were exactly the same way.
Really?
Forever. For fucking 100 years.
I remember my first license had, it was like a school, like ID. It had my picture, like,
but
inside of it.
That was cutting edge because right. before that, there was no picture.
That was 88.
Yeah. So mine was 93, so I'm with you. Same fucking right. deal. So anyway, driver's licenses just didn't have pictures. Now, I didn't comprehend this because my entire time I've had a license, your picture's on it. It got more and more complicated. Actually, you know, you now need like a weird state ID thing
yes.
on top of your license just to get
correct.
On an airplane.
Yes.
I mean, I have a passport, so it doesn't fucking matter.
Right.
But if I didn't have a passport, that's like weird. Anyway, neither here nor there. Ted Bundy gets pinched in the car. He gives him a fake license and the fake registration. They're like, this car is stolen, sir. And he's like, oh, I don't know. I don't know what to say. I'm just driving around. Woo! And they lock him up. For real. They lock him up.
Right.
He murdered 15 people recently. Like, really just chopped up a whole bunch of people.
Right.
A little girl, the girls at the fucking sorority house. Like, he was on a tear. Maybe it's 11 people. So he gets locked up, and he goes to court, and he's got a public defender, and the public defender's like, there's no reason that you can't put him out on bail. And the judge is like, we don't know who he is. He will not tell us his fucking name. The license, the guy called in because it was on the news. And he's like, well, that's not me. I'm like home and stuff. It wasn't me. I'm going to say Barry Gibb, which it wasn't Barry Gibb. Because I like the B news. But he's like, hey, well, Barry Gibb's at home. And that guy up in jail is not Barry Gibb.
Right.
And they're like, oh, who are you? And he's like, I have no comment at this time. I will not tell you who I am. So you couldn't check his fingerprints in 1978 on the computer. For
right.
real. They had no idea who he was.
Fingerprint analysis took weeks.
No, they had no idea. So he's in jail, bro. He breaks, and he's just like, I'll tell you who I am if you just let me make a phone call. And they're like, oh, yeah, here's a phone call. And who's he call? The woman he sat next to on the suicide prevention hotline for years. This married older lady. He's like, hey.
Okay.
He's like, hey, Ellen, it's Ted. How you doing? She's like, really, Ted? Didn't you just kill a bunch of people? He's like, yeah, I didn't really do that. That was other Teds. But how you doing? So he calls her, right? And he's like, I'm Ted Bundy. And they're like, oh my God, it's Ted fucking Bundy. So now we got multiple states that are trying him for many, many, many murders.
Right.
Fucked up, man. So I can understand modern technology to some capacity.
All right,
I heard someone say yesterday, like, it wasn't the 1930s. Like, it was 1978. How did he chop up a whole bunch of people in Colorado and then just take a train to Florida and chop up a whole bunch of more people? And he just gets away with it. And of course, he gets pulled over driving because he just can't drive. That's his
right.
worst. His worst feature is driving. He just can't do it. And he goes to jail. And he's like, I will not tell you my name. And they know he can't. That's it. He's just in jail. They don't know his fucking name. Nothing. What are your thoughts?
That police need to do better police work back then. I wonder why so many people got away with murder.
No, literally. I want you to think about logistics for a second. Have you ever been to Colorado in your life?
Yes.
Okay, I haven't. Been to Florida a bunch of times, right?
Right.
If you lived in Florida, Tallahassee, I've been to Tallahassee. We toured through Tallahassee twice
right.
in our lives. Good place.
That's actually a southern as hell place in Florida, too.
They loved us. They did.
Yeah.
We loved them. It was good times. But they're really good people. But it's kind of back. Even now, it's like old-fashioned.
Right.
Okay? Even now. So in 1978, it's like desolate.
Right.
And just, what are you going to do?
It's like, what's the name of that show with that Ron Howard started in as a kid. Not Happy Days, the one before that, Black and White.
Yeah.
Andy Gibb?
No, not Andy Gibb. No, Andy Griffin.
Andy Griffin.
Griffin Show.
Yeah, that one. Which we call it. He
That's what Tallahassee was.
Yeah, that's what it was like
so
back then.
So how is a police officer going to figure you out if you're from fucking Colorado?
You can't.
That's not more police work. There's nothing you can do.
Right.
Thank God he broke. He cracked. Because he was just going to fucking hang out for this Grand Theft. He could have done a year for the Grand Theft Auto and just got out.
Right.
And just been Ted Bundy, chopping up people. And he wrote, I think in his diary or something, it was like January of like 77 to 78 or whatever it was. And he was like sitting on the beach in Tallahassee. And he's like, well, I killed a bunch of people and I got away with that. And now I'm just on the beach and I'm getting a tan. And life's good, you know. And maybe I've turned a corner and I can stop killing. Nope.
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 Back to killing.
Just gotta kill, kill, yep. kill. And again, never got caught killing. Just gets caught driving away. Never gets caught killing ever. Like, ever.
Like, that's crazy.
He was to the point where he broke into this fucking... It's so sad. I'm laughing, but it's sad. He breaks into a sorority house with a big piece of wood and bludgeons a whole bunch of bitches and fucks them and bludgeons them and kills them. All bunch of bitches. Like, chop, chop, chop. Like, he went to room one. He killed some bitches. He went to room two. He fucked and killed... Like, he fucked a lot of bitches and killed them. Yeah!
That's crazy.
You didn't know that story?
No.
Oh, yeah. And then he gets out of there, and he bounces. Then he picks up, like, an 11-year-old, and he, like, starts cutting her up and shit. Like, it's bad shit. Like...
Jesus.
Your soul is damaged.
Yes.
You're a bad human being.
Yes,
like,
you are. That's not... No.
Like, even Bill Cosby didn't kill them. He just, like, you know, is the most prolific rapist in the history of time. But
yeah, that's... He's a whole nother level.
That's creepy shit, man.
Nah, I'm good.
I don't know. I feel like he was so rich, he could have paid them to let him drug them. But I guess the kick is
he could have just paid them for sex.
Actually, the groupies are real. He could have just fucked them. Like, but he didn't want to just fuck them. He wanted to, like, you know, that's his kink. I mean, I understand kink. I don't like that kink, but
I'm good. I'm into, like, clamps and floggers and some candle wax.
Don't share any of that ever again. You just... Ooh.
Why? With our guest for next week, you don't want to talk about that stuff?
You want to give, like, a... What's,
oh.
No?
Kate.
You can't say any names.
No, I can say your name.
But I thought she was going to use an assumed identity.
She is.
So anyway, next week, Mike and myself on the Vex on Vex podcast, which I believe by then will be episode 44, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
Are going to... She's a dominatrix. Is that what she is?
Correct.
We're going to interview a dominatrix.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. Right. I have a bunch of questions. Like, how do you get into this fucking business? Did your dad beat you and rape you when you were 11? Like, things like that, you know? Like,
what? No, I've actually met her... I met her parents once.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And?
Really cool people. Normal, laid back, average American mom and dad. Nothing real unassuming about them. If you'd see the three of them out in public together, they look like a very normal, happy...
I thought this chick looked insane.
No.
No? She looks like demure and normal and shit?
Well, when she's dressed normal, yeah. When she's dressing in her normal street clothes, she just looks like a hot chick with blonde hair and nice boobs and a nice ass. That's it.
Wow, that's so...
And then you get her home and she puts on the leather outfits and the high heels and breaks the whip out and abuses men for a
These are trigger words, sir. You're upsetting me tremendously.
I don't know what you're saying.
I might need to be in therapy at this point. I don't know what's wrong with you. What
kind of therapy do you need for that?
Oh, I have to be coddled and held. I need a safe place. I have to, like, calm down and... Do you remember being
she might be able to help with that.
Do you remember being 18 and if something upset you, like, could you fathom wanting a safe space and anyone fucking allowing that to happen in your life? Like, I remember being, I was 18, I dropped out of college, right?
Right.
My mom was like, get a fucking job. And I'm like, what do you mean? I got to just like, you have a jerk off part time job. You quit school because you're a loser. Get a fucking job and you got to pay fucking rent. And I'm like,
damn.
I probably didn't say fucking, but it was mean like that. And she was right. I didn't disagree. I was like,
right.
Yeah, I kind of watched fucking Gilligan's Island all day. Maybe I should fucking do something, you know?
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
I hear you, but still. So I had to go out and get a job. Now, listen to this. In high school, I started out in eighth grade and stuff. I was a paper boy.
Right.
And I read later that Puff Daddy or P. Diddy, where the fuck his name is, was also a paper boy. But then he grew out of it.
Okay.
And he was now he
grew out of
no,
it.
But listen, because you do. When you're like 15, you want to be a paper boy.
Right.
You want to get girls. But he had taken over all the paper routes, and he paid other people to run the routes, and he still pocketed a lion's share of the money.
Wow.
Because he had like 17 routes or some shit.
Right.
I wasn't that industrious, but I had three routes. So I had three paper routes. So as like a kid, I was in the 80s at like fucking 12 years old, I was banking $1.50 a week.
Wow.
Which is a lot of money
yeah.
for a little kid. And I don't think I saved any of it. I bought music equipment. I bought cassette tapes and records and fucking t-shirts and bike like dumb shit for a kid.
Right.
But it's a lot of money. So I was doing
yeah,
well.
I was spending my money that I earned back then when I started working at 14 on skateboard parts.
And I'm with you.
Right.
And then I remember always having to have the best Sony Walkman, the newest one. Remember the yellow one?
Yes.
That was waterproof?
Yes.
I broke them constantly.
Yep.
But I loved it. I was like, and in my mind, I was like, in the commercial, you could surf with it. Clearly, I never went surfing with it. I mean, correct. Ever.
Never.
But I want, just in case I'm going to go surfing, I have the waterproof one. So, excuse me, goddamn. A lot of Sony Walkmans. There's a lot of shit like that. And then the next real job I remember is being a busboy in a fine dining restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And I would make $50 in a 4-hour shift.
Wow.
Which is good money.
Yeah.
So I'd work twice a week, 100 hours in cash. If I worked 3 days, $1.50. And just money, right? And then I did this all the way through high school because it was so lucrative. Like, it was good money.
Right.
I would add more nights on, $50. But it adds up. And then I got a car. Car insurance was expensive, but I could pay it. And gasoline, which was not expensive. I thought it was expensive. But
right.
for like $15, you filled up your fucking car for real for like a week.
Right.
Remember that shit?
Yeah, I remember taking my Buick LeSabre. I had a 69 Buick LeSabre with a big old Buick 350
yeah.
under the hood. 4-hour carburetor. I would put $22 worth of gas in that thing, and it would be a week's worth
exactly.
of gas.
So you understand.
And it was like a 30-gallon tank.
And cigarettes were 89 cents, and we thought they were a lot. Like, 89 cents? It's crazy for a pack of cigarettes. You're crazy, right?
Uh-huh.
Right? Because I remember, I never smoked, but I always had a girlfriend who smoked, so you'd buy her cigarettes. What's the matter?
Next bother.
I'm sorry. Yeah. The weather.
No, yeah, it's the cold. It's nothing about anything else.
So then I drop out of college. My mom's like, get a real fucking job.
Wow.
So I get a full-time job working at a place called Messinger Bearings. Which the drummer for We Are One, no, I'm so sorry, wrong band, the drummer for Solo, Maz, who's my dear friend, now works for the incarnation of that company many, many years later. It's
okay.
Like Ben Salem somewhere or something.
Yeah, I remember that company.
Yeah, you do, because it was, but they got
yeah.
bought and they moved. But they made bearings for like NASA and shit, giant industrial fucking metal rings. They're like
right.
the size of this room. And I would fuck them up and write Vexel Nicole inside them and carve it on them because I hated my job. I was a jerk-off kid. Thank God there were never any fucking NASA explosions in my time because I probably caused them.
Right.
Anyway. Back to the point. I get this fucking job. And I'm like, all right, I'm gonna make real money. And it was the hardest like week of my life. I had to be up at like 4 o'clock in the morning to get there on time or 5 o'clock in the morning, whatever it was. And I never stood for an 8-hour shift in my life. I was a kid, I was a jerk off kid.
Right.
And I was like tired and beat up. And I'm like, all right, they pay me. And I think I made $165. And I was like, what? Whoa, what?
Right.
I made more in 2 days bussing tables at my jerk-off job. My mom's like, get a real job. You'll be a real man. I was so upset by it. Like, I was tremendously, tremendously disillusioned. And then my friend, who I think I discussed this with you before. No, it wasn't you. It was somebody else. On this podcast, though.
Mm-hmm.
His name's Steve. He was a bill collector.
Right.
And he got paid $8.50 an hour to sit at a desk in air conditioning. And
right.
call you up for your finger hut shit. Ah, you didn't pay your finger hut bill. Can you pay your bill, please?
Oh, my God.
For real. And then his take home was like $260 a week or something.
Right.
Which was like $100 more than me. And I was like, I'm quitting this fucking job. I'm going to go work there. Fucking
right.
A. And I went and worked there for a while. And then I wound up going back to be a busboy because it was so much more money. Like, it was crazy more money.
I worked for the news cleaner.
Yeah.
And I worked so many freaking hours. I was pulling at 16, I was making $300 a week.
Yeah, dude. That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
But as a kid.
Yeah, we're talking 88. I'm making $300 a week take home.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
Right.
I just said that with my mouth. I just gave you the props.
And
you're like, I'm going to say it again.
I have to say it again.
But the point is, I learned working less and making more is where it's at. Which is why I'm a roofer. Because I can
agree.
Go do a roofing stop and be working 90 minutes and make what most people make in a week in a day.
Right.
And go home.
That'll be me. That'll be, well, not roofing, but IT work. That'll be me later today. I'm going to go home. I'm going to make a whole bunch of money, and then I'm not going to work again for the rest of the week.
And that's what I'm saying. So it's like I learned even back then at the tender age of like 12 that this is like the hustle. And that though I had one real – oh, you know why I worked at a factory? This is how dumb I am. I read in like Hit Parade or fucking magazine or Kerrang or some shit – Eddie Vedder used to work in a factory before he was a rock star. And
oh,
I was like,
God.
I'm going to be like Eddie Vedder. Hey, you want to see the story come back around? Check this shit out. I'm working in the fucking factory. I'm a jerk-off kid. I'm 18 years old. I hate my job. I used to hide in the toilet stall because I just hated it. I'd be like, I'm just going to hide there for an hour and take a nap, right?
Right.
And I found a newspaper. I'm reading it. And the paper, not the internet, the paper's like, Beck playing J.C. Dobbs this Saturday. And I'm like,
oh my God.
Holy shit, the loser guy? I'm a loser guy. I'm going to go see the loser guy. So me and Steve went, and it was like $8 or $5, whatever the fuck
right.
it was. And there's Beck, and he has a giant MTV hit, and he won't play it. And it's just him and an
what
acoustic guitar.
Hell?
Yeah. And his little tiny band on the Dobbs fucking stage.
That tiny postage stamp.
It was great, man. And he just, I hated it because he used to play all these songs I never heard before in my life. I'm like, Beck, play Loser. He's like, you're the loser guy. And he's like, yeah, I was going to play these folk songs. It's going to be fucking awesome. I'm Beck. But I was there.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, I'm here. And someday, and then we, like, somebody do math. 8 years later, we were the house band on that stage.
Wow.
The postage stamp, but still.
Yeah.
8 years later, we were the house band.
Was I saw yeah. I saw Beck at BB&T Arena back when it was whatever.
Tweeter Center
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, whatever it was before that.
The one
that
in Camden.
Some 10, I think it was 103.9. Okay. That like, hipster station that was out for a while. They played Beck and other stuff like
of
that.
Course.
But yeah, my ex wanted to go and see them, so we went over and saw it, and as soon as Beck was done, he did like a whole like acoustic set by himself. Didn't do anything else. Didn't play Loser or anything like you're saying.
Well, that's what he did at ours. He was acoustic for a while.
Right.
And then a drummer came out and a guitar player came out. And they just put a bunch of songs we never heard. Because it wasn't like we knew who the fuck this guy was. But it was sold out. And I remember thinking in my head, I was like, they didn't think the Loser single would be a hit. So they plotted him on this little tiny tour. Because the next tour, 3 months later, he's playing TLA. You know what I mean? Because now you're a national and you got a hit under your belt, et cetera, et cetera. And he probably still won't fucking. He'll play it live now because you know what he says? Oh, it's like a cover tune. I don't know.
That's horrible.
No. Beck's a talented musician and I have nothing bad to say about him. I was 18 at the time. He was 23. So he's 5 years older than me. And I'm reading an article at my Loser job. Mike, I had never been further away from my dream of being a professional musician than when I worked in a bearings factory in a fucking awful uniform that they gave you. Oh, my God.
Oh.
No ventilation. There was what's that stuff that you're not supposed to breathe in? That's in like
asbestos.
Yes, an entire building caked in asbestos. For real.
I know.
It was bad. And I'm just sitting there, and I'm like, I'm such a loser. And this Beck is my theme song because I'm a loser baby. So why don't you kill me? I'm gonna go see Beck, man. And I went to see Beck, and it was fucking horseshit. It was like horseshit, man. But I went to see him.
Meh.
But I'd never been further away from my. I'm in a stall, sitting on a toilet, reading this newspaper. A newspaper. Like, my God.
I remember them days. I was never a bathroom person where I went and hung out in the bathroom at work.
I think I slept in every bathroom I've ever been employed in. There was one where you could lock the door and there was carpet on the floor. I would lay on the fucking floor and just take a 20-minute power nap.
Holy crap.
A lot. Like, this happened a lot. Yeah, dude. Just had to fucking sleep, man.
Right.
That was, please, hold on. What the fuck was that? Elmer Schultz Services.
That sounds familiar.
They're, air conditioning repair, heating repair, fryers for like McDonald's and shit like
right.
that. Food equipment repair, that's it.
Okay.
I was a dispatcher. Thinking back, it wasn't a bad job, but I was a jerk-off kid and didn't appreciate anything. So what are you going to do?
Become a roofer and a rock star.
Yeah, I definitely left that to become a rock star, and then the roofer thing kind of just happened. I like it. It's weird, like, there has to be, I say this all the time, there's something psychologically wrong with anyone who's okay with climbing 60 feet in the air with 90 pounds on their shoulder. And they're like, oh, it's cool. I got this.
Right.
And now all of us have it. Like, the whole crew we work for and stuff, we're all fucked up in the head now.
Right.
And most roofers are complete drug addicts because, oh, yeah. Like, if you...
And your crew's not.
No, well, you can't be if you work for me. I'm not like that.
Right.
But that's why we get, like, very lucrative customers. Because if you're going to a million-dollar house and you have all your teeth, that's important.
Right.
Because most roofers don't look like that. No, I'm telling you the fucking truth, though. Like, at least you have fakes. Yeah. These guys don't have any fucking... Hey, I'm your fucking roofer. You're a hole in your fucking skylight. Give me $100.
Yeah, no.
I don't do that.
No.
I'm licensed. I'm insured. We're like, you know, respectable and shit. I don't know, man. It's a good little living. And it's just there's got to be something wrong with you to climb like that. And
right.
It's a little bit like being on stage, I guess. Like, for you to get in front of a room of 100 people and make a complete fool out of yourself, there's something fucking wrong with you. Like,
right. They
say that about stand-up comedians. Like... They want you, like, I want your, want you to love me. So I'm so fucking empty and dead inside that I want these strangers to tell me I'm a nice guy and laugh.
And I hate everybody.
Yeah.
And don't care about validation.
Really? I disagree tremendously. All right. Let's talk this truth between us, my friend Magnus.
Okay.
You write really impassioned, give me attention things on social media.
Usually because I'm pissed and I just need to vocalize it. And that's how I do it.
Well, there's no vocalization required. That's expressing it through typing, sir.
Well, vocalization as in expressing it through some type of form of writing or speaking.
Going through this divorce, I definitely had those feelings.
Right.
Where I just wanted to like write like gnarly shit on social media. And I always stop myself and I'm like, no, try to be fucking smart and... I could just see this coming up in a court case later.
Right.
Like, things like that.
That's different. When you're going through a divorce and there's proceedings that are happening, yes, anything you say can be used
against you. Can and will be used against you. Right. Now, my band manager, I asked him for advisement. He said, don't even mention it on the podcast till it's over, which I didn't do, by the way. Right. I talked about it all the fucking time. But, yeah, smart. Like, pragmatic ways to, like, function. I don't know, man. Bad stuff. Like, I'm 43. And I kind of feel like a failure in that regard.
Right.
My company's a success. We do okay.
Right.
My band's a success. We do okay.
Right.
I don't have AIDS. Hey, knock on wood, because I probably should, you know?
Right.
And then,
you
know, I have a nice little life. I live well. We get to do this and hang out. You know what I mean? Like podcasting.
Right.
I have fun. The Eagles won a championship last year. That made me happy. Like, things are good.
Right.
But I'm 43, and it's like, the prospect of spending the rest of my life with just me makes me a little sad. You know when I get sad? I had a holidays.
Right.
We broke up in the summer, officially. And then we had like mild reconciliation in the fall. And that didn't last more than like a week. You know what I mean?
Right. I remember that.
And then it was like, all right, it's on. We're getting divorced. You know, paperwork and attorneys, et cetera, et cetera. And Thanksgiving came. And I didn't have anywhere to go. And it was sad. And it was really, and she went somewhere because she has a family.
Right.
And my family's gone, you know? So I went somewhere and I ate food with somebody. And it was like empty and it wasn't anything. And then Christmas was coming. And now I'm sad because there's a little kid and I'm going to miss the kid really. And I'm probably going to miss her. And it's like sad. I went to Mexico.
I remember.
Yeah. And I got, I mean, it's pretty fucking good.
This is like, I sent you a message. I was like, yo, what's going on? You sent me a picture from the airport going, heading to Mexico. Talk to you when I get back.
Exactamundo. It was good times, man. But the human aspect, it's like a little lonely.
Right.
I don't have any family. It's very sad. Not sad. It's the way life works. It's a timeline. No one lives forever. I get it.
Right.
But here I am at 43. I feel like a fuck up. Like, the first marriage isn't my fault. She dies. Second marriage is my fault. I fucked it up. And I liked that marriage. I could have stayed in that marriage.
Right.
And the third marriage, I did everything right. I was respectful. I didn't do bad shit. And I like bad shit. I like bad things. But I didn't do them. And I got fucked over. And she did them, which is just crazy to me. So now in the future, I'm like, well, I just should keep cheating because that way I won't get cheated on.
Well, I'm not big on the whole cheating thing. That's mm-hmm. why I go with the non-monogamous lifestyle. And
okay.
I find women that are of the same.
We discussed this, though.
Yes.
And they say they're okay with it.
Right.
And then, Michael,
not.
What happens?
They're not.
Exactamundo.
Right. Like the one, the Nestor, she wound up messaging me last night from a new OkCupid account trying to apologize for everything that had happened the other week and stuff like that, and that she wanted to scale things back. And I was just like, no. I'm like, how do you go from being non-monogamous, just friends with benefits, to let's have a life together and have kids in 3 days, to I'm not sure what I want to do now 2 days later?
You keep having microwave relationships though.
Correct.
Like, you're going too fast, bro.
That's the thing. I wasn't trying to go fast. Like, she kept calling me, asking me if she could come over, which I'm not going to say no to good sex. So,
but you didn't know it was good sex yet.
No,
you?
It was good sex.
No, you didn't know yet. That's the point. It was new.
Right.
No? Okay.
No. We were hooking up together for a couple weeks at
I didn't
that,
know that
point. No, we were hooking up from right around the beginning of the year until just a week and a half ago.
A few hours ago.
But right. Yeah, like she was literally leaving the house before you got there. No, I'm kidding. But she, she went from full-on, I'm not into monogamous relationships and don't want to have a steady boyfriend or a husband, to let's get married and have a kid, to 2 days later going, never mind, I changed my mind and I don't want to do that, but I don't want to lose you, so let's just go back to having sex.
There was this great band in Philadelphia that lasted from roughly 2003 to like 2008. I'm going to say maybe 2006, something like that, called Anima Sola.
Okay.
I liked them a lot. They played a lot of shows with Starscream. They were
right.
Really good, man. The singer was super cut, like Marky Mark built.
Right.
And we take his shirt off all the time on stage. And he was just like, it was a little cheesy, but I didn't look that good, so I had to respect it. And he did look amazing. And the
right.
band was really great. They had this song called Hard, Hard Winter. And when my wife died, it was a hard, hard winter. And I was discussing it with the singer. And then right after that, his wife divorced him. So he was depressed too. And I remember thinking in my mind, I'm like, you don't know depression. Your wife's alive. My wife's dead. But the point is, he was very sad.
Right.
And I felt bad. His name was Carl. Really good fucking guy. So their songs are on my iPod. I go through this divorce process. It's finished a few days ago. Right. Excuse me a second. Hold on. So I go through the divorce. I get this old iPod that I have, and I put it on my speaker in my bathroom, and I hit random, which I always hit random.
Right.
And that fucking song comes on. It's been a hard, hard winter. And you're like, yeah, it has been a hard winter. But the spring's coming, Mike.
Right.
It's
I agree.
Very, very close.
I agree.
And I'm going to just embrace it and just go dating and go to movies and go to the beach and hang the fuck out and take my crew to Atlantic City sometimes and just spend money for no reason.
Oh.
Yeah. And I'm going to enjoy, how do I say this? 2019 is going to be the year of happy. Because
I agree.
You've never been married.
No.
But sometimes when you're in a marriage, man, it's weird. We went to several counselors to try and fix this shit. Didn't work. And all the counselors are like, marriage is very hard and takes a lot of work.
It does.
My second marriage didn't. She was a cool fucking chick.
Right.
And we were in simpatico. We watched similar shit on TV. We liked similar fucking movies. We ate similar fucking food. And there was some stuff she liked that I didn't and vice versa. But we made do. I don't know. This last one was just hard. Just fucking hard, man. A lot of I don't know what you're thinking. And I, you know, I don't have a glass forehead. And neither do you. And you should express yourself more. The point is 2019 is going to be the year of fun. We're just going to be like, ah. I don't know.
I stop trying to figure out what goes on in other people's heads. And they just accept them of what they are and what they say and what they do. Well, not even what they say anymore.
That's the thing. I was just going to say that. So on this marriage I was in, one thing was said, and then other things were done.
Correct.
And my God, how do you fucking function with that? Say what you mean, do what you say.
People are fickle.
Yeah, it's sad, man. And I always prided myself as very selective.
Right.
And good at judging character. That's seriously something I always took very seriously for myself. Clearly, I have no idea what the fuck I'm doing.
I am a horrible judge of character.
Well, you shouldn't advise everyone with that fact.
Just saying.
I mean, I don't know. What are your thoughts? Would you ever get married at all?
At this point?
Yeah.
She'd have to be a sugar mama and absolutely into me. That's where I am with that right now. Like, I don't suspect that any woman's going to come into my life and thrill me to the point where I'm going to go, let's get married.
I don't know if it's supposed to be that way, to be honest with you. I think it's, I don't know. I shouldn't say what I really think it is, but it should be natural and smooth. Like, all right, I met my first wife. Dude, this is fucked up. When I met her, the night I met her, her long-term boyfriend had proposed to her, and she was 23?
Right.
No, she was 22 still. And she's like, I don't get fucking married. Fuck you. Ah, and ran away. And calls her roommate. My roommate's trying to bang her roommate. So I'm sitting there while they're like at a restaurant fucking flirting. The phone rings. She's like, hello. She's like, where the fuck are you? You're my roommate. So-and-so just fucking tried to ask me to marry him. I'm not going to do that shit. Blah, blah, blah. Right?
Right.
I get the cell phone. I'm like, hi, my name is Vex. How are you doing? And she's like, I'm okay. I'm like, listen, I am never going to ask you to marry me. Let's go on a date. And she's like, okay.
4 months later.
Boom, married. What the fuck? Like, I totally agree with that sentence. Like, I'm an asshole. Like, the way I picked her up is like,
that's great.
I'm never going to marry you.
Right.
And then 4 months later, hey, we're getting married in Vegas. Woo! On tour. Woo!
And Elvis is doing it.
No, we took it a little seriously. And it was like a real preacher. And it was really nice. It was beautiful, man. The only thing that makes me a little sad is her mom wasn't there. Or her parents weren't there. But neither were mine.
Right.
And it was just us. And it was this fucking, she was cool, man. Out of anybody I've known in my life, that woman was my partner. And I fucking, it was really cool. All
right.
Like, where we are, we're in Vegas. Dude, she was like 5'1", 5'2". She was really tiny.
I like the short ones.
Yeah, she's beautiful. And she had a little backpack on and these like fucking tight little jeans. And we're just walking in fucking on the strip in Vegas. And I'm like, this is perfect. Like, the whole band was centralized in LA, Los Angeles, California.
Right.
And we had like 4 days off between the shows. Because you only play the weekends, like Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Right.
Right.
So now there's nothing going on. So like, it's like a fucking Tuesday or some shit. So I fly to Vegas. And we were supposed to go for one day. And it was so perfect and so nice. We stayed for multiple days. I called her. I'm like, we're just going to... Oh, she's beautiful, right? So she gets us a suite for like fucking nothing. Like, we go into like the Bellagio. They're sold out. We end up going to the Paris. And again, she's gorgeous. The woman was gorgeous. She just walked up to the desk. And she's like, we just got married. She has her little ring. And she's like, what do you have? And he's like, I can get you a suite for like $100 a night. And she's like, yes, we will take that, please.
Wow.
And then I call him the next day. I'm like, we're going to stay 2 more nights. And I'm like, okay. They didn't blink.
Yeah, of course.
It was fucking awesome.
Sam was like, all right, cool. Talk to you later.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they didn't care. They were partying. It was fucking L.A. Drugs everywhere, dude. It's good times.
I can't even imagine. I've had such a normal life in comparison to that.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I've had the... I did the family thing. I did the separated and not with your kids thing. And then I did the here thing where I am now. So...
You've had a colorful life.
A little bit, but different. Never disappeared and went to Vegas and got married, so...
I didn't disappear. God damn it, we were on tour. And we came back and finished the tour.
That's cool.
It was cool. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we've went an hour and a half with Magnus.
Holy crap.
On the Vex and Vex podcast. Now, we're available on the Podbean application on your phone under the Loud and Loaded Network. Now, this has been episode number 43 of the Vex on Vex podcast. And we would ask you to please go like our Facebook page and download the episodes and things of that nature. Anything to say before we leave, sir?
Be frosty.
Aw, this is VexX telling you to stay frosty. All stealing my shit. Thanks, guys. Bye.